Welcome to episode 212 of Sports Geek. On this week's CEO series episode, I chat with Melbourne Rebels CEO, Baden Stevenson.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who's connecting with listeners on LinkedIn, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and I am very thankful that you're listening. And I'm very thankful that also for those who do send me a message and hit me up on social media and let me know that you're listening, whether you're doing that on sportsgeekhq.com, on the Apple Podcast app, Google Podcast. You might be listening to it via your Google Home or Alexa. But yeah, I really do appreciate people who do reach out and say they've been listening or a long-time listener or a first-time listener. Thanks to Damien and Neil who did that recently and reached out via LinkedIn. You can connect with me on all of those channels, Sean Callanan or Sports Geek on most platforms. Or the old-fashioned way, you can send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Before I get into this week's episode with Baden Stevenson, I was lucky enough to catch up with him at the headquarters of Melbourne Rebels and talk about his journey to becoming a CEO of the Melbourne Rebels in the Super Rugby competition here in Australia. Just want to have a quick shout out to all the people who are in Sports Geek Nation. And if you haven't checked out Sports Geek Nation yet, please do so. Sportsgeeknation.com. Much like this podcast, it's built for people who want to connect, find out more about what's happening in the world from a digital point of view, technology, some good conversations happening in different channels around stadium tech, sponsorship, and recently, as I've said in the last couple of weeks, the Ask Me Anything sessions with members have been absolutely phenomenal from both sides, from the questions from the membership, and then also the thoughtful answers from people who are hosting those sessions. We've got those happening weekly now. You can see the highlights at sportsgeekhq.com. But please, if you've got any questions, please reach out to me or check out sportsgeeknation.com. It's for connectors, leaders, doers. I really like the mix there of people who are leading the way in what they're doing with their organisation, but then also in execution mode, so you can share with some of the successes of things that you're trialling from a tactical point of view, whether it be trying to sell tickets or boost engagement on your social media and digital platforms. Now, my guest for today, Baden Stevenson, is the CEO of the Melbourne Rebels. They are a rugby union team, and here in Melbourne, based out of Amy Park. We met it in the offices there at Amy Park, and we discuss Baden's career, his journey to becoming a CEO, and also we do touch on when he became CEO and the uncertainty that surrounded the Melbourne Rebels as a franchise at that point. So for a little bit of context for the people, and we do go into the interview, but yeah, for a long period there was some definite uncertainty on whether the Melbourne Rebels franchise would continue in the Super Rugby, and so Baden actually took over as CEO during that period, and luckily the Rebels did continue, and now we can get to plan forward. So we discussed that on this chat as part of the CEO series. So please enjoy my chat with Baden Stevenson from the Melbourne Rebels. Very happy to be here at the headquarters of the Melbourne Rebels here at Amy Park. Baden Stevenson, CEO of the Melbourne Rebels. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, for the people who don't know, international listeners and that, tell us a little bit about the Melbourne Rebels overall, where they sit and what they provide in the Melbourne market.
Yeah, the Melbourne Rebels play in the Super Rugby competition, which is 15 teams played in South Africa, New Zealand, Japan and Argentina. We're the newest franchise. We're 8 years old and, yeah, finding our way and carving out, the Melbourne Rebels down here in Melbourne.
So that's the thing, 8 years is still, you know, when you look at storied franchise in history, it's still very much in its infancy at 8 years, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, and over that 8 year period, we've felt that we've probably had a couple of restarts on the way. So yeah, no, we're still very young, and we've had some growing pains and finding our way.
So I want to get a bit of your background and how you came into the CEO role. Take us back. What was your first foray into sport?
Yeah, I grew up in Canberra, played a lot of sport, and when I finished school at Marist, went to university and I did sports science and teaching, and then I
And so was that because you were playing?
Yeah, no, just playing. Yeah, under sevens rugby. I kicked off because my brother played, and the little primary school that I was playing with, and then rugby, basketball, and cricket. They were my three staple sports from seven to all the way through school. And then I was okay at basketball, and then at the end of school I had to choose which one I wanted to follow, and the profile of rugby in Canberra at the time and first 15 at my school was the one that I chose, and ended up staying in rugby and in the sport for a long time.
And so what were your first couple of roles in rugby?
Yeah, I started after I finished university. I was playing for the Tuggeranong Vikings, and I thought to myself, they actually offered me a job just when I was finishing the degree, and I thought, oh, this would be good. I'll go and do that for 12 months before I go and look for a real job, and stayed in the role, and gone to a whole host of experiences.
And so you went into the coaching space,
yeah.
That took you internationally to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what were some of your learnings of that experience and getting into that coaching environment?
Yeah, well, I wasn't 100% sure which pathway I wanted to go. I was in operations and development, and then management, and then coaching, and that I did make the decision to go down the coaching path, and I had a great opportunity to travel to Japan and got a good coaching job over there. But yeah, huge learnings over there. Yeah, different culture. Even the communication and rolling into a rugby club, which I didn't have any background with and didn't have a great understanding of who was involved and how they played, and huge opportunity to shape that particular company.
So how do you the role, the path to CEO is a little bit, it's not normally coming from like the footy ops and coaching side. So what did you do, I guess, outside work? What study did you do to sort of build up that business acumen to look at potentially a CEO role down the track?
Yeah, no. Well, as I said, when I wasn't quite sure which pathway I wanted to go, I did my level three coaching, but also did a diploma in business. I had my teaching and sports science degree. And ultimately a lot of the work that I've done along the way has been practical experience.
Yep.
I'm very big on professional development. I've done a lot of short courses and tried to expose myself to a whole host of professional development. Probably 2 years ago I considered doing a master's to sort of round out my education ultimately I didn't quite have the time with the young family and work and decided to just continue on the pathway. So look, it's a combination of picking up skills and along the way.
Because the thing is, you have had multiple skills in different parts. You've seen sports business from different angles in the admin side and the coaching side. Do you think that's given you a good breadth of knowledge of all the different parts? Because you've sort of sat behind their desk or walked in their shoes a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I do think it is a little point of difference, and I've worked with various people that are strong in some areas and probably weak or don't have an understanding of the pressure points or what certain other parts of the business go through. So, look, I'm absolutely learning from the business front, but I think that I've got a pretty good handle on everything from Rugby Victoria and what they're doing on the development side and the community side. Having worked in the general manager of rugby, contracting and high performance, I'm well versed in, and there's been a big learning curve over the last period in regards to running the business.
So for the I want to take you back to 2017 before you took on the role. Super Rugby was going through some large changes and some uncertainty, and the Melbourne Rebels were definitely part of that, where it was looking at which of the franchises will will go on. Take us back to that time, even before, like before you took on the role. What was that time like, you know, in these four walls?
Yeah, oh, it was a really tough time. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Yeah, the uncertainty lasted for, yeah, I think 4 or 5 months, and that's a really long time. And yeah, I had a good chat to, you know, Frank Panisi at the Storm, and he was sort of saying, yeah, the worst part of his career was, yeah, the uncertainty that they went through. But he said that was at least short-lived, and we got to a result, whereas we were months upon months. So, yeah, no, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of uncertainty and a lot of emotion. So, and, yeah, that was from staff and players and, from the club and also our members and our partners and our supporters. Yeah, no one really knew what was going to happen. So to be in limbo and not be able to really, push the button and on your planning and knowing what's happening was tough.
So it's a really tough spot because you were appointed as CEO while you're in that limbo, not knowing if the Rebels are going to go on as a franchise. And so because normally, you know, you take over the role as CEO and you go, I've got a blank sheet. These are the things I'm going to do. What were some of the things that you, I mean, because you were on one hand fighting to stay in the game and that was a big part of your energy, but on the other hand, you've got to make sure that you're looking after your staff and their concerns. How was that first, couple of weeks?
Yeah, no, it was a very unique time and it was a huge honour and privilege to be appointed, but without knowing exactly what the future held, it was definitely tough. And I think trying to keep a little bit of a steady hand or an even temperament in an environment which was highly volatile was how I tried to manage the people and the staff and where I could I tried to be as transparent and ultimately try and over communicate anything that I knew I wanted to share with my staff and my people because it was obviously affecting them. So and then once we got through the season then got the green light to that we were staying in the competition. There was a mountain of work and we had to move pretty quickly and thankfully I had some good support from the board, but we had to restart the club and bring a lot of new blood and new people into the business.
Because you would have had that sense of relief of that sword hanging over the club that's been taken away, so there's that relief and it's like Well, now the work starts.
Yeah.
So what was the first, once that you got that clear air in front of you and you could plan, because you can't plan unless you know it's what's happening. Yeah. What were some of the first things that you did look at to say, well, now we have got runway, we've got something in front of us.
Yeah.
What were some of the first things you looked at?
Yeah, well, I think looking at core business was fixing our rugby program and making sure that we, had the right people on the bus. And so
when you're saying from a rugby program, talking operations and grassroots and feeding into the team?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I think, getting the playing list and the football, the coaches on board.
Yep.
We had to do a huge amount of work. Yeah, our key issues were around the high performance of the team, the commercial and the community. So we had sort of three key pillars, but I think the absolute first priority was to get our list sorted as quickly as possible. And I took I certainly wasn't asleep at the wheel. I had positioned things reasonably well if or when the decision came, and so I was able to move pretty quickly with some new appointments of the players. But ultimately, getting the new coach on board was critical, and we were able to go through a process and appoint Dave Wessels from the Western Force. And look, he was very, very close to the signing overseas, so he was certainly a good get. And once I had Dave in place and the list in place, then I could focus on other areas of the business.
Do you think that obviously your strong operations coaching background really, like, you were the right person for that, for the job at that time, because that was a strong focus that was needed?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think having that background and knowing a lot of the stakeholders and knowing where, having sat in a lot of meetings, both internally and externally with Sansar and Rugby Australia and the Players Association, I knew all the moving pieces and I think that I did an okay job just pulling them all together at that particular time. So I think there was, I think it needed to be someone internal that could move and move quickly.
And so how is your, you recruited Dave, CEO and coach are the two, figureheads for a club.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with Dave and in, again, because you've got a coaching background.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with Dave?
Yeah, no, look, it's really positive. I'm a big fan of Dave. I've learned a lot from Dave this year. He's he's a terrific coach, but to be able to come into a club and, I think that his real strengths is, he's planning, he's very driven, he knows where what needs to get done. But some of the softer skills that Dave's been able to bring to the club, he's very good with his messaging and his media management and, setting a vision for the team. So, look, we get along really well. And I think that, he knows that I've got I've coached and I've got a strong rugby background. So, I think we built up, pretty quickly. Respect and trust for each other, and ultimately, we're fairly honest with each other, and I think our relationship's really, really building, and we're working very closely on a whole host of decisions, and that certainly sometimes have to go through a process, and we don't always agree, but look, by and large, we're working hand in glove, and hopefully, setting us on the right path.
And so you get the operations house in order in appointing Dave and getting a playing list and saying, okay, on the pitch we're going to, we're headed in the right path.
Yeah.
You talk about the other two pillars. What were the things that you went ahead to go and tackle those?
Yeah, firstly with the community, I think 2016 and 17 we had a private ownership model, and there was lots of advantages, the club did some really good things in that period. But retrospectively, one of the areas that we probably dropped the ball a little bit was really showing the love and the respect of the community game, and that was one of the things that I really wanted to build the bridges and actually put our hand up and say, look, we didn't quite get it right, and that we're a pretty small market here in Melbourne, and we need all the people that are registered or have a strong interest in rugby. We need them in the Rebels tent. So we had to show a bit of love and put our arm around a few people and to try and bring them back, but that takes a little bit of time. But we had to be show some authenticity to sort of say, look, we're very interested in the community game, and we're a bottom up club, and we build from the bottom, and that starts at grassroots. So, and that's been an evolution, and we'll continue to build in that area.
And so that's connecting with the clubs and the players, because it is a bit of the sports administrator's dream of, they're playing the sport.
Yeah.
Why aren't they coming to our games? And it's not as easy as flipping a switch, and it's not a rugby union thing. It's a multiple sports we're seeing. You do have to put in, that hard work, whether it is reaching out to clubs and engaging them and inviting them and 100%. Having the players out doing clinics, that kind of stuff. So it was a really big initiative to sort of mend some of those fences, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had to get our players are our best ambassadors, and so we needed to get our players back out into the rugby clubs and the schools and back into the community. So, we also know in Melbourne there's nearly 500,000 rugby supporters in Melbourne, and we need them to, one, understand who the Rebels are, what we're about, and actually have a feeling that they're either my team or we've got a lot of expats and Pacifica people that play rugby here in Melbourne. So some of them have grown up with their New Zealand favourites, but we want the Rebels to be their second favourite, and we want them supporting professional rugby here in Melbourne.
And it's very much is Melbourne being such a unique sporting town. It's you're in a super unique precinct with multiple sports, multiple codes in this stadium. Mm-hmm. Across the road, you've got terrific facilities, but it is very much, you still got to make that connection with your fans and your community.
We have to show respect to the rusted on rugby supporters, but there's a lot of people that are new to the game in recent years, and we want them to feel part of the Rebels club and on the journey and connected to us. So I think if they're connected and then there becomes a little bit of loyalty players, then they become fans and supporters, which grow into members, and there's a bit of a pipeline of into partners, and we want long-term people supporting the club.
And so how is relationships with and stronger ties with like Rugby Victoria help that balance? You weren't sort of both out there promoting rugby, not coordinated, doing different things. Yeah. How is getting stronger ties with
the state organising body helped you in that respect?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we're owned by by Rugby Victoria. We're a community based club these days, and I think when we were based at Icon Park, one of the huge benefits of being here at Amy Park, we're all on the same level. Community, commercial, and rugby are all in the same building. At Icon Park, we're on different floors and in different locations, and it actually felt like could have almost been three different organisations within the one. We've been working certainly far closer with Rugby Victoria, and the narrative has certainly changed. Not only with the community, but also with commercial partners to say that we are all of rugby, from under sevens right through to Rebels and Wallabies. We are one, growing the game and promoting the game all the way through.
And so the next challenge is, and one of the phrases I like to use in the podcast is the cheeks and the seats, and trying to get more fans to the games and have that taste of this is what a Rebels game is like. What has been some of the initiatives that you've done to widen that fan base, to get more people through the door, and diversify, like get a younger audience, get different people coming to a game to understand it? Because you talk about still introducing, still introducing the game to people in Melbourne. So you've got to balance that. Yeah. It's always tough because you've got the rusted on.
Yeah.
I know the game. I know how it is. I don't need to be explained to. Yeah. Because it's almost similar to what I spoke to Ryan Cavaney at the Giants in Sydney. He's explaining a new game to a new market. So you've got to balance that piece. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, no, really good question. And knowing our audience is really interesting. We've got our membership base is actually a 40 plus age demographic, and we know that a lot of our casual ticket sales are sort of that 25 to 35 age group, and then 75% of our viewership is actually overseas. So with our new general manager of commercial, with Ross Senos, we're just working through a whole host of strategies now about actually communicating in a different way to different segments to target different outcomes. But look, in regards to how we getting bums on seats, we took a strategic view with the board this year that we discounted at a time when most membership offerings are probably increasing in price. We decided to really show to the local rugby community that we wanted to make membership affordable and accessible. So our blue membership behind the post, we actually reduced it by 40%, and that was a good strong sign to say, and a strategy to say to the community, listen, we want you back. We want you at our eight games each year. And we've seen some really good growth in that particular membership this year. And that's something that we'll continue to grow on. But we understand that we don't have some of the crowds of the other sports. So when they are here, one, we need to entertain. But as you quite rightly pointed out, something that we haven't done particularly well is actually educate. There's a lot of our members or supporters are actually also AFL supporters, and so they know rugby a little bit, but they like it, and it's a Friday night at Amy Park. But do they really understand the game? And I think I was listening to one of your podcasts. When you've had some visitors and you sort of say AFL, there's actually no rules. It is very difficult to actually explain the rugby laws or the rules. To someone who doesn't familiar with them. So we're looking at a whole host of strategies in regards to what we're putting up on the big screen, what our ground announcers explaining on the run, running some actually inside the stadium, using our players, using even some of our corporate functions to just educate the people that are coming to rugby, so that when things do happen, they actually say, "Oh, okay, now I start to understand it a little bit more."
You mentioned it before about knowing your audience. Super Rugby does provide a really unique offering from a fan point of view, and also a corporate point of view, because you've got the international audience and market that traditional games, AFL and NRL don't have as a strong piece. How do you go about positioning that out to the market, that you've got this very very different and unique sort of offering? The fact that you're off the international audience, the viewers, How are you, I guess, framing that to corporate partners and things like that?
Yeah, look, it's very unique, and yeah, we can use Massey Ferguson as an example. They've been a partner from day one, and I think they're the only one that's been for the absolute full journey. So their business is in Asia, South Africa, and New Zealand.
Yep.
So, for example, when we go to South Africa, we host their senior executive staff, and they're either their clients. All prospective clients. And I remember 2 years ago we hosted a couple of boxes and we did a number of functions with some of their guests, and I met them 12 months later and he said that 90% of our people that we invited were potential clients, and now the conversion rate is up to 90%. They've all changed over. And he said the first experience was, one, they were connected to rugby. They got a great time with the Rebels. They got a whole host of inner sanctum experiences and probably had a few beers and built some relationships, and they were able to leverage our partnership, in South Africa. So, yeah, when we are talking to partners, yeah, we are the international game and the global game. So, yeah, we've got to leverage that as much as possible, and particularly for the, for the big organisations that have, have a presence in those areas, when we've got the team, obviously the games, but yeah, when we're touring, there's a great opportunity to really engage with those people in foreign markets, which some of our partners really enjoy, and obviously in Japan, we've done a lot of things with head office and some of their staff, and done some really unique things.
Because it does it does present both an opportunity and a challenge, because the easiest thing potentially to do is to go, well, let's recruit digital fans from all of these regions and our numbers look terrific, but then you're also got the local marketing strategy of, well, we've got to connect with people in Melbourne. I remember working with the Storm many years ago. And when we first sort of looked at their data, they had stacks of Queensland fans because they had strong Maroons players. So it's like, but those people can't come to a game. So it's a bit of a balance to which fan group and which audience you chase.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've seen a massive shift, I'm sure, as you have, in that digital space. And I think that the way people consume and they're so visual these days, and to really get a feel for what's happening at the club, you need to see it, breathe it, and really feel feel it coming through in the imagery. So, that's an area that we want to continue to evolve and to do better. One of the things that we really are focusing on is just having some real cohesion within our digital. I think in the past we've been a little bit guilty of being a little bit siloed, whether it's been the team and then the marcoms and then the membership and match day however we're doing it. But actually having some cohesion and consistency about how we do it and what our style is. We've been a little bit patchwork quilt in some cases. So having a real Rebels feel, so that when people see some imagery or some footage, they know automatically straight away that's Melbourne Rebels.
Yeah, and we're seeing, I caught up with Kevin Cote from Facebook. He was here the other week talking about how different teams are tackling, content and the way that they're like stepping up their game to say, well, this is, and it's part brand and it's part emotion and it's part, telling the story.
Correct.
And it draws people in.
Yeah.
And then the sales job of selling the ticket or the membership or that comes later. But if you're just going with it, and more teams are going down that path to go, well, we're going to build audience. We're going to have people watch more of our videos, more of our content and be more engaged and deepen those ties. And the commercial outcomes will come from it as opposed to, here's a ticket offer.
That's
that kind of thing. And it's good seeing more, teams sort of tackling that approach. And it gives you that segmented approach. You can say, well, this is what we're pushing out to different segments, or this is what we're doing in the local market.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's when I first arrived here at the Rebels, we only had one Wallaby player, and we're very fortunate now that we've got as many as 10. So growing those personalities and those heroes and connecting with the kids and, as you said, different segmentation. And look, I listened to you at a recent conference where you talked about monetizing your digital assets. And, I thought that was fascinating. And that's something that, where sport's going. And, we're probably a little bit away from that, but actually understanding, as you said, I think you talked about a rate card, but, what is the value and how, what is it worth? But I think that we've got to be, our first step is to really do a big engagement piece and build that build the base and then and continue to evolve.
That's where the opportunity is, and that's the power of sport. Like we're seeing, you know, corporate players in the social and digital space are having trouble trying to get that connection. Mm-hmm. And so if you can, you know, be tapping into that emotion piece and the storytelling piece, the heroes, the fact that more and more fans are now following the players and their story and what they're doing on different platforms.
Yeah.
Like that's the opportunity, and it's part of it is, you know, you're talking about breaking down some of those silos, you know, getting the buy-in from the coach and the trust between the team. Like if you're going to have a digital person be walking into a change room or recording something, you know, you don't want it to be bulletin board material. Yeah. That's still a case, you know, and you understand that from your coaching background, but it's really important to go, well, if we can start telling this story, it does draw people in.
Yeah, no, definitely. And look, we're really lucky. Dave had some background actually in media, and he ran his own company back in South Africa many years ago. But, yeah, some of the things that we're looking to do, we've had people that we invite people into the coach's box but also into the change room for presentations. And look, we're actually thinking about doing things a little bit differently. Yeah, we find that Super Rugby, the post-game interviews are quite rigid and a little bit stale, and actually inviting the media into our change rooms. I mean, I'm not a massive AFL fan, but favourite part of watching Friday night AFL is the post-game interviews, being in the change room and watching just grabbing from the chairman to the captain to the mother, and you actually feel part of the club, and you sort of get to know
there is a real big opportunity. I mean, you know, you're talking about roaming Brian, where the broadcaster walks around the change room and just taps people on the shoulder, but I think, you know, there is a opportunity, I think, and I think this is an opportunity. The Rebels is like the rigidity of media access and access to players.
Yes.
I mean, there's been some real, you know, big kudos to teams just opening up their doors, letting all the journalists and all the media in to let the stories come out.
Yeah.
And if you look in the US where, currently right now NBA media day is happening and, you know, my social feed is all full of all the players talking.
Yes.
And I think that's potentially, you know, that opportunity. Yes, you can be telling your own story.
Yeah.
But you can also be leveraging as much media as possible. And so giving them the access and opening up those kind of things, whether it's change rooms or handing microphones to players because they're becoming more savvy and be able to talk.
Absolutely.
Like that's the piece that it's not as refined, but people are looking for that type of content. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. And look, we just outside my office here, we have the banner and three times a week. And we want to, as you said, break down those barriers. Yeah, we want to invite the media to, we have a couple of lunches a week, to come and sit down and have lunch and actually have a proper conversation as opposed to three or four, guarded questions.
Yep.
When the guys are getting strapped or lying around the physio room doing their stretches, that might be another opportunity. But in and around match day when we're on tour, we know that we need to be to let our fans and our supporters and everyone inside the Rebels tent a little bit more, and we're very fortunate that we've got a coach that wants to do that and wants to do things a little bit differently.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, working in with and around the broadcaster and what their rights are and what you can and can and can't do. But the idea is everyone's goal is to lift the game.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Heading as you're coming to the end of 2018 and 2019, what's your focus?
Yeah, well, we've gone through probably the most thorough review process I've been involved in rugby. We've obviously got a new commercial manager, so we're refining our rugby strategy. We're basically tipped the whole commercial strategy out onto the table, and Ross has come up with a fantastic strategy, which will evolve over the next 12 months. And then we're also looking at our cultural review. We've found that we had a couple of incidents at the end of the year. So, there's been a few gaps in our program that not because people don't care, but there's probably a cross and check balance.
Get the checks and balances
that's
in place.
Right. Yeah. So we had a unique situation where we almost molded 25 new players and staff into the club all in a very, very short period of time. So, we're in such a different position to where we were. But look, our focus on is, and we're just finalising our list, but we've we felt that across all of our three pillars, with our rugby performance and our community engagement and our commercials, that we actually did get some good momentum and built some really strong foundations to continue to work and not to lose sight how we got there, but also we need to continue to evolve. And I presented at Rugby Australia only a couple of weeks ago with the other four Australian rugby CEOs, and what was really pleasing was, even though we came off a really tough 2017, our data and our metrics, we had growth in membership, we had growth in our match day attendance and also our viewership, and we're actually bucking the trend compared to the other three franchises. So, we feel that, if we do perform here in Melbourne on the field, and that's absolutely key, but if we also engage with our community we've already seen that some of our commercial partners, rather than doing it one-year contracts, they're now looking to extend and for 2 and 3 years and actually go on the journey because they know there's some stability in the club now.
Well, that's terrific. I want to finish with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I'm not sure you'd call it an event, but I grew up in Canberra and I'm a Canterbury Bulldog supporter, and I was out at Seaford Oval dressed in full Canterbury uniform and flag and met some of my heroes as probably a 5-year old. It was probably the first live game or rugby or sporting event that I can remember.
You would have been to a few different sports events over your time. Do you have a favourite food memory? Is there a go-to food that rugby is known for?
I don't want to sound too toffee, but I think that there's nothing better than fortunate to have gone to a lot of rugby games where you have a glass of wine and a steak before the game and then go out and watch enjoy the game. So I'm pretty easy to please.
Oh, terrific, terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
I'd say Facebook.
Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there someone that the Sports Geek podcast listeners should follow that you potentially read or you follow them to keep on top of things? Is there someone that you recommend or a recent book you might have read?
There's a gentleman called Greg Layton who's doing some sports podcasts, and I've only recently been listening to his, and I've actually learned a lot and quite enjoyed the diversity of some of the presentations there.
I actually listened to the Inner Chief podcast in prepping for this, I'll link to the show notes. What social media platform is your MVP, and you can answer it personally and then maybe put your Rebels hat on?
Yeah, look, I only recently jumped on, probably a year ago, I'm a late bloomer, jumped on Twitter, and but I absolutely love it that you just pick up so much information, just snapshots of information
On Twitter, have you been accessible to Rebels fans? Because that can be a wonderful and a brutal experience at times.
Yeah, no, that's something that we've talked to Ross about. I know that when we did our members forum last year, I was I thought this could be absolutely anything, and really opened myself up. But we're just planning our forum again in about a month's time. So yeah, look, that's something that I'd like to do a lot more of, and just to to connect and to a lot of people sort of ask what's it like and what are the challenges, what's working well and where's the club going, and just having the ability to maybe over communicate on our platforms is something I'd like to do.
And it does give you the pulse of what the fan is thinking, and you have to take the good with the bad, and when you're hurting, they're hurting, and that kind of thing. But it can, from a, like you were talking about before, transparency and saying, hey, we want you to come on our journey. Yeah. Coming from you, I mean, it's still good coming from the club, but occasionally coming from you and showing that you're hurting, that the team is hurting if there's been a bad loss, or that you're ecstatic when the team, so you're showing that fandom and how much it means to everyone in there, because there's sometimes that weird mentality that, that the fan thinks, oh, they don't care, or there's so much care inside those walls.
Absolutely. I had a funny experience last year. One of the commercial staff from membership sent me quite an aggressive or an emotional email, and And I just I received the email, walked straight out of my chair, and I said, "Can you get onto the database and give me his phone number?" And she said, "You're not going to ring him, are you?" And I said, "Absolutely, I am." Anyway, he was shocked that I rang and rang so quickly. And anyway, we ended up having a great conversation for 15 minutes. And when I was able to let him know how the club was feeling and shared some of his pain and talked about what we were doing, and anyway the conversation went from aggressive to I'll see you next home game, and he really appreciated it. And it was a bit of a learning there. I thought actually being personable and as you said, you take the good with the bad, but I think if you if you're consistent and make yourself available, I think I think people will appreciate it.
I think that's a terrific point, and I think that's an opportunity that digital offers, but then also as a whole club, like how do you scale that throughout the whole club? Because it can be like whether it's coming from you or whether it's coming from the receptionist or whether it's coming from someone that's setting up a membership tent 3 hours before the game.
Yeah,
like that one touch point can be you've locked me in.
Yeah,
how do you push that message and ethos you're talking about, culture and that before? How do you push that out throughout the club?
Yeah, no, really good question, and it's hard to get consistency across absolutely everyone in the club. So that's something that we're going through right at the moment in regards to, just having, a succinct, mission or values. And you don't want to get too corporate or too technical. Yeah. I think if people can feel the passion for for the club and what you do, and I know that I love working here, and I know that if the fans can feel that the players are putting in and representing them and actually playing for them and playing for the jersey. And I know that the members like seeing a little bit of themselves in there. So actually also as we talked about before, showing some personality and thinking, well, I used to play rugby, or I did this, or I couldn't do this, but I'm watching you guys do it. And I think that's really important to have a genuine connection. So in answer to your question, that's something that
it's most likely happening every day, and it's a little bit of internally.
Yeah.
You just want to hear more of those stories and say, "Oh, we helped out so and so," and and just to sort of, I guess, get that momentum of there's that rebel's karma, if you want that just keep moving on. That it's something you internally you just want people to be putting their hand up or patting someone on the back when you see that effort being put on by someone else, whether it's in your staff or in someone else's team.
No, definitely. Look, we've had a number of visitors, something that I'm actually quite proud of, a number of visitors, and I think it's because we don't really have an ego and we're probably not a threat to too many teams. We've had an unbelievable amount of people that work in the sporting industry that have come to Melbourne that have come in for some professional development or to come in and see what we do, and the feedback about how welcoming and engaging and the lack of ego and actually how personable people in the club are, that's something that I know that obviously training out here, anyone that can stop and watch training, and I'll often see after all the cones are packed up and the last guy, I'll often see Dave Wessels talking to a kid and an old bloke or someone running past, and I just think that just being able to connect and just be just show that you're good people, really. I think that's half the battle, and I know that the character something really important when we recruit both staff and players, and I think if you get the right people that they will buy into what the club's trying to do, and
it's a weird one. I don't know if you saw Lee Jenkins, who's a Sports Illustrated, long-time Sports Illustrated journalist, has recently been hired by the Los Angeles Clippers, and initially when you think that, he's a long-time journalist, he wrote He helped LeBron James write his "I'm Coming Home," but he's been recruited in the operations department, and I think his title wrong, but it's effectively identity. Mm. And so he's going to be working with the operations side to dive in and to be able to find out more of the stories and nuances of the potential of the recruits and the playing roster and potentially what So it really ties to culture and how he goes about finding someone's story and the nuances of their story. I think it's gonna be really interesting to see. From my point of view, I don't think he'll just work on the operations side. I think he might end up working throughout the like they just might say work throughout the business and sort of break down some of those walls and let some of those stories happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops, because I think, you know, a lot of clubs talk about the importance of culture, but it's really here's the manual.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah, no, and one of the things that Dave did particularly well this year, we went on a preseason camp up to Ballarat, and that's where our five stars came from. He wanted to know exactly where did the Rebels name come from, and dug down. To find all that and make sure that all of our team knew who we were representing. But one of the great things that he did was, he talked, everyone had an opportunity to sort of tell their own story. And out of that camp, he talked a lot about love. And it was amazing. Love is not something you'd normally talk about in a rugby team. And I had, some of our 20-year-olds or people that were speaking throughout the year, and they spoke about it really confidently, but geez, they bought into it the love for the game, but also the peers and the people in the change room and the people in the club. And it was just something that I'd never really seen such a raw emotion and associated with the team, but it actually really brought everyone together really quickly, and it was very, very powerful.
And so now your challenge is to see that success and sort of how can some of that connectivity and love and support that happens on the pitch and with the playing group and the coaching group to say how can it work with admin? And correct. So it's not separated. They're one, one club type philosophy.
That's right. Definitely. And even things with our environment here, and as you walked in here, there is a wall separating the commercial team and the rugby team, and we're talking about knocking that down, and just our behaviours and the way we interact on a daily basis. I think that if it's if you create the environment where it's easy and everyone's accessible, I think that'll play a big role as well.
Well, thank you very much. Where can people find you, and where can people find the Rebels on the internet if they were trying to track you down and ask you a question?
On
Twitter,
and LinkedIn, Facebook. So certainly for either myself and all the Rebels. Yeah,
all right. Melbourne Rebels. Thank you very much. Best of luck for the preseason and the season later this year. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
No problems. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Baden Stevenson. You can send him a tweet, Baden Stevenson, and that's BadenStephenson. And as always, you can check out the show notes and links that we discussed, as well as connecting with Baden on LinkedIn. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/212. You can always read up the show notes and check out some of the tweets and posts that the Rebels have done. And you can do that always on the podcast by going to sportsgeekhq.com. Lastly, just talking about digital to dollars, we discussed a little bit there in my conversation with Baden. We've been doing a lot of work in helping teams understand their audiences. The real opportunity is understanding the different types of audiences that you can reach via digital, and then what can you do with those audiences? Can they be monetized from a ticketing membership point of view, similar to my conversation with Steve DeLay previously, or is it a sponsorship opportunity? In the case of the Rebels, looking at that international audience, how can they go about engaging fans in a digital sense internationally, and then partnering up with the appropriate partner. So that audience piece is really important, but then getting down to that valuation and how you develop the pitch back to your sponsors is super important. So if you want more info on that, you can go to digitaltodollars.com. Currently putting together the structure of the book, as I've said previously, my goal is to make digital the primary revenue driver for sports by 2030. And Digital to Dollars is built for that goal. So if you're interested in growing digital revenue and growing that digital activation revenue and delivering more returns for your sponsors, I did see a really good article that I did share, and it would be in Sports Geek News if you read Sports Geek News, on a lot of sponsorship executives on both sides, whether they be the brand or the team side, still can't measure return on investment. I think it was 19% actually measure return on investment. I really did like former guest JW Cannon, his recent tweet talking about return on objectives. I completely agree with what JW is saying there. Diving in on the objectives and making sure those objectives are successful is a really big part of it. If you're reaching the objectives, then the investment does take care of itself. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Sports Geek Nation, powering along the AMAs have been a terrific success. Thank you very much to Alistair Hogg last week. Leah Murphy last week. Alistair was the week before. And currently Andrew Walton is currently taking questions. So if you have not yet checked out Sports Geek Nation, please do so. Go to sportsgeeknation.com/members area. You can start seeing some of the content that's being shared, including full transcripts of the AMAs. We'd love to have you as part of Sports Geek Nation and learn from people like my guests on the podcast, but then also other people that are performing similar roles to you around the world. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.